Hey guys, hope you're all well. I just wanted to jump on here real quick and make you all aware of some exciting stuff that we have happening. First off, there is now a link tree for Uncomfortable Podcast. The address for that is linktr.ee/uncomfortable1. And the uncomfortable is spelled like the logo with the lowercase u and the uppercase n. I've had a lot of people reach out looking for all the other shows that I've made appearances on, and this is the best way that I can provide you those links. Most importantly, it will have the links for the new spring lineup of Uncomfortable merchandise, which is going to run from today through April 28th, and items will ship out and be in your hands by May 17th. We're using the same company we did before, so you know that the quality of the hats and shirts and everything will be exactly what you're expecting. Make sure to check out the store, go through all the different items because we've added additional colors and styles. Remember that the cost on the website includes whether or not you want it printed on one side or two, and it also includes the shipping to get it to you. Bigfoot and Brews and Spirits 2 tickets are now on sale. You can purchase those tickets through Eventbrite directly, or you can find the link to the Eventbrite site by going to Bigfoot and Brews and Spirits 2 Facebook event page. You can get to that through the Uncomfortable Podcast Facebook site. This year, we are super excited to announce that not only the day of event on September 14th, but again, this year, we will be doing a VIP dinner the night before. At the same venue, we have an option in the tickets for a combo package, the VIP and day of event ticket. If you choose this option, it's a $15 savings to you off the combined cost. And that will include your meal and one drink per ticket. The VIP consists of 2 hours of conversation with all five of the speakers and yours truly. There are only 30 tickets available for the VIP dinner. So if that's something that interests you, make sure you move on it. We've already sold 6 in the last 12 hours. The itinerary for September 14th is this. Doors open at 10 a.m. and event runs until 6. Speakers for the day will be Amy Boo from the Olympic Project and Project Zoo Book, Scott Tompkins from the Bigfoot Mapping Project, Salt Fork State Park naturalist John Hickenbottom, and the Archbishop Christina Rake. And the day opens with Chitan Noir doing a long overdue segment on the 1964 sightings of the Dewey Lake Monster. That event is the whole reason why we are celebrating at the location we are. Sister Lakes Brewing Company is again the venue. If you've been to Bigfoot and Brews before, you'll know that the food and the drink are the best around, and the atmosphere there is absolutely electric. I've been to a lot of Bigfoot conferences, and I have to say, the past 2 years, between the attendees, the environment, the brewery, the staff, they have all made Bigfoot and Brews the premier Bigfoot conference in Michigan and Indiana. So thank you for that. Don't forget, head over to the link tree and visit the merch store. Get that stuff. It's springtime. You know you're going to want to be sporting some uncomfortable t-shirts over the summer. And then hit the Eventbrite link and get your tickets for Bigfoot and Brews and Spirits 2 today. Look forward to seeing you all there. Take care.
Doing that, I was face to face with it. It was holding me by my throat, and it felt like it was sucking something out of me.
I probably should have been more scared than I was when I witnessed the exorcism.
I turned and looked on my right side. When I did, there's a beam on the side of the tree, a large beam. It's looking at me, and I'm looking at it.
After I hit the lock button and looked back up, I saw red eyes staring back at me.
That they're going to show multiple gods all over the earth, be able to speak in people's languages, and at that point, it kind of converge into this one entity, which will be revealed as extraterrestrial. You'll realize that aliens are the gods of old, and at that point, it'll wipe religion out of the context of humanity.
No way, they couldn't have been a person, I know that. I know that people can't run through the woods like that.
So this thing comes into view, and I see it. It's 50 yards away from me. It's walking on two legs. It's huge. This is a big, hairy-looking being.
Welcome back to the show, my friends. I am your host, Eric Szilagyi. If you've had an uncomfortable experience and you'd like to have it featured on the show, please get a hold of me at contact.uncomfortable@gmail.com. The world wants to hear your experiences. They want to hear your story. So get a hold of me and let's get yours on a future episode of Uncomfortable. If you don't already, make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, both at Uncomfortable Podcast 65. And please remember to leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you can. That's the main way you guys can help get this show out in front of more listeners. And with more listeners listening, it means more people coming forward with their stories for you. Head over to Uncomfortable Podcast on YouTube and check out the show in its video form. And while you're there, hit subscribe and the notification bell. That way you'll be made aware every time I upload a video version of the podcast. If you're interested in helping support the show, head over to patreon.com/uncomfortablepodcast770 and check out what we have there for you. Or if a standalone contribution is more to your liking, you can do that as well through Red Circle and their sponsor, this podcast tab. The links for those and our Discord server will be in the show notes below. Tonight's guest is a host of NCI, North Carolina Investigate podcast, and published author with Beyond the Fray Publishing. That's Shannon LeGros Publishing Company, and Shannon's over there at Into the Fray podcast. He's got two books available, Monsters of the World, a reference guide, and Legends, Myths, Monster, and Ghost. We'll hear more about those. I'm really interested in the reference guide, but our guest has a pretty hairy experience himself that we're going to be getting into. So if you're ready, let's get into it. So if you will, please give a warm, uncomfortable welcome to Mr. George Lunsford. George.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
How are you, sir?
Pretty good, I reckon. How about yourself?
Doing well. Glad we were able to make this connection. It's unfortunate that the gentleman that introduced us took ill. It sounds like the rest of his family did as well. Don't wish that on anybody, and hope for their speedy recovery, but he will
He's a good kid.
So, the reason I found out, or the way that I found out about you, was through Harley Owens, and he said that he had taken you on an investigation of sorts into a research area that ended up proving to be pretty successful for you guys. I want to get into that, but I want to hear about these books you have out first, and tell everybody where they can find them, who websites, anywhere that they can be purchased. But then I really want to get into your Monsters of the World reference guide. That is that's tweaking my interest here.
It's pretty cool. It really is. I actually wrote it because some friends of mine over at is it okay if I give their podcast?
Sure.
Okay. The ones who inspired me to write the book is from it's Drink Beer No Bullshit Podcast. And those guys are great. Nice. I've interviewed with them probably 4 or 5 times now. But I wanted to put a book out for podcasters to use as a reference. It's what I did is I gathered information on 104 different cryptid creatures from all over the world. And I also included 26 encounters with cryptid creatures that were sent to me personally from different people, all from different groups and stuff on the internet.
Very interesting. That's what a great idea. A reference guide for podcasters.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of us out there, and I'm kind of a weird person anyway. So I love.
We all are. We all are.
But there's some really cool ones in there. There's everything from giants to many little people, to water creatures, to a plant in South America that is known to eat people. It's a tree. Then there's stuff in the Antarctic that the Russians found, that they found it in a glacier lake underneath this giant glacier. They was drilling down and found the lake, went down to check it out, and they found this creature, and it's like 20 feet long with all these different tentacles, and it can spew toxic fluid 10 to 15 feet out.
It's an alien. Yep. I'm not saying it's an alien, but it's an alien.
I think so. What was funny is after it already killed several scientists and they went back up and they were documenting everything, the president, I think it was actually Putin, to come on and said, no, this didn't exist. This is all fake.
Before you get too much further into this, so like your collection of information in your in the creatures and all that, are these anecdotal stories or is there reference material to back up the existence of these things?
If there were sightings about the creatures or any kind of encounters, I included that with the story. Like there's one story at the very beginning about the dragons. Marco Polo actually recorded it in his findings when he was exploring in China about dragons. Well, that's in the book. What he found, what he said about the dragons and everything.
Interesting. You gotta put me on the list. I need one of these books. I'm 100% serious. So when this is over and we're done recording, you tell me how I get one of these. And
you can get them on Amazon.
I need one. Can I get one signed though?
Well, we might be able to work something out, I'm sure.
All right.
I don't know where you're at exactly. So
I'm in Northern Indiana.
Northern Indiana. I usually go up through Indiana in November. We go up for Thanksgiving to see my our son and grandkids up in Chicago.
Oh, nice. Yeah, about 90 minutes to the west of me.
Yeah. So when I go up that way, I'll let you know, and we'll meet up somewhere, and I'll sign your book. How's that sound?
All right, sounds good.
But there's some fun creatures in there. There's mermaids. There's giants. There's just these. Africa and South America have some of the wildest cryptids that you could think of. And a lot of them look like they're leftovers from the Ice Age. You got all these different things that there's nowhere else in the world that has these creatures.
Yeah. Interesting.
And like I said, there's a tree in South America that the natives avoid, but it has a tendency to grab visitors. If they wander in this one area, the tree will grab the person, wrap
with
them
what?
Up.
Like with limbs or vines, yeah, or what?
Well, they look like vines. They grab the person, it pulls them over to them, and it drains them of all their fluids.
That doesn't sound very nice.
It leaves a husk.
Good Lord.
Oh yeah. I just found all kinds of fun stuff. And I did find that there was a Bigfoot species, not necessarily the one like we have here, but there's different species of Bigfoot, and they're in every continent and every country of the world.
Yeah, I think
they may call them something different. They may look a little different, but they're all still pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, within the community of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Almasty, I think it's pretty well accepted now that they are literally on every continent. And yes, there are differences, and they are probably varied species of the same thing. But I think it's safe to say that's a real thing.
Oh yeah, that no doubt whatsoever. They found right after I got the book out, they actually found bones of a hobbit-like species in, was it New Zealand? I think it was in New Zealand. I had wrote about them in the book. I thought that was kind of interesting that they had found that. And they're finding more and more stuff. They even found a monster-looking thing. It has a lot of tentacles. And it's recorded now in the Annals in Science down in Antarctica. When I wrote that, but about where the Russian scientists found that one creature down there.
That's interesting. I'm going to have to try to delve into that. If you have some information on that, I'd like to know You know, it, if they've actually proved it and found it.
Well, what they sent out, what they proved. Now, this wasn't the Russians that the scientists that put this thing on the internet last year, but it looks kind of like a really strange looking octopus. Has, I think, it up to 20 tentacles on it, and it's huge. So, you know, some of this stuff is starting to come out more and more. What amazes me is how people will fight you, this is not real, this is not real, and then science actually finds something similar to it, and it's go, oh, okay, yeah, it's real now.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of us have already been talking about it.
Right. Well, a lot of people lean on the science. A lot of people do. You know, I mean, my son, he's a geologist. He's mm-hmm. trained and educated, and you know, he is into all the weird topics that I am, and he enjoys it, and he gets a lot of entertainment from delving into it. Mm-hmm. But he has a kind of a do not cross line. And yeah. And that line is formed because of his science training and, you know, education. And I get it. But there's times where it can be frustrating in conversation because, you know, he'll just, you know, it's like for him, it's like, if I don't see it, it might be real, but if I haven't seen it, that's the only way I can really say that it exists. And
yeah,
I mean, I understand it, but I think I tend to be a bit more open and accepting of these things than he is. Not everything. I mean, there are some things that I just think is complete hogwash and poppycock, but there's a lot out there that I think is real.
Well, I asked your son if he believes in unicorns.
That I probably would get a laugh out of. You probably
there is, even the Bible actually talks about unicorns.
Really? But
there is an actual live unicorn out there right now. It's a unicorn goat, and it's a goat that grows a single horn. Huh. They're very rare.
I would imagine so.
You can pull them up online, and they'll show you pictures of them out in the wild and stuff.
Interesting.
I love getting people with that one, and I love getting them with I had a friend of mine. He said, "Oh, you're full of crap." He said, "I've never seen it. I've been in the woods." I said, "Okay, you've been to a bank, you've been to all that stuff too." He says, "Yeah." I said, "You ever seen $1 million?"
Right.
He said, "No." I said, "Then how you know it exists?"
Yeah. Social commentary here. I don't think money is real anymore, at least in the sense of.
Well, I don't think it is
either. In the sense
I work for banks.
What it used to be, now it just seems to show up when they need it, and they print it at will, and there's nothing really backing it other than we have to spend a lot of it out of our pockets to get anything anymore. That's cool. But all right, so let's rattle through some more of the unique creatures that show up in this book.
Let's see if I there's the book.
Nice cover.
Let me see if I can find something really good for you here. The cover was actually the second cover that they picked out. The first cover I picked out for the book. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it because it didn't have realistic looking monsters on it.
Okay.
But I liked it. So
as you're looking through there, how did you get hooked up with Shannon over at Into the Fray?
Well, they had heard about my other books. The first book I did with them was this one right here. Legends, Myths, Monsters, and Ghosts, USA edition. This is actually my first four books I combined in to make this book. Then I added another 100 stories to it and two more Indian tribes stories in it. So this has five different Indian tribes in it with their stories.
Okay.
And just a little warning, most of the Indian, I say Indians to Native American because when I spoke to the elders in the Cherokee and the Choctaw, they refer to themselves as Indians. So out of respect for them, that's the way I refer to them.
Okay.
Okay. I have Cherokee and I have Sioux and I have one of them I have is the Hopi. When you read the Hopi, you're going to think you're reading science fiction.
Really?
But the way they do their stories is very exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually has a story built around the story. And they're fun to read. But man, they're long-winded on some of them. Are they?
I get accused of that sometimes. I get accused of taking the, what did their one review say? Taking the scenic route to answer questions. So apparently I ramble on too much.
We do too. I don't feel bad. But she had heard about my other books and I talked to them and we'd message back and forth and they asked me if I was interested in them publishing my books. And I said, yeah. So we had a contract set up and they were going to publish two of my books. So I redid that one and they loved it. So I did it and they were happy. Then I did this one and they were pretty happy with it because the first book was 590 pages mm-hmm. and this one's 300 and something pages. So they were happy to get big books.
Nice.
Now this has gnomes in it. Gnomes are mean little turkeys. I mean, you really don't think about gnomes being mean, but most of the time they're nice, but there are some evil gnomes in the world.
Are there? Just is that, so you know. is that a cultural thing? Is that because of their placement in whatever country or?
I think so. I'm not sure. They come from over in Europe. And there's more than, when I say Europe, it's more than just England or Ireland or Scotland. I mean, it's, these creatures are in several different countries actually.
Okay.
And there's some good stories about them. I liked when I did the Gollum. I did a story of the Gollum, and that's one where the Jews created this creature out of a clay mold, mm-hmm. and they could put the stuff in the Gollum's mouth, and it would perform these duties, whether it be kill somebody or hoe the garden.
Right.
You know. And it's got a lot of fun stuff in it. And
that's an interesting story about the Gollum because there was a, and this is going back to when I was a young man, probably even maybe early teens, there was a made for TV show. And it was, I think it was a two hour movie. And I think it was made up of three different stories. And one of the stories was about a Gollum and that they did a really good job. That one kind of freaked the hell out of me, to be honest.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. I was an actor for 15 years on the side. So
oh, were you?
Anytime people talk about movies and stuff, I get into it.
Yeah.
I usually played a bad guy on independent films.
Oh, nice.
I played a lot of monsters and,
did you?
And I played a gangster in a lot of them too. So, you know, I'm a country boy gangster, I guess.
Very interesting.
I've been reading in and investigating these things for a long time, but that one I got to see with Harley,
mm-hmm.
that was awesome. You know what? The weird part is everybody talk about how for most people it's life changing.
Yeah.
For me, it's a Tuesday.
Really?
I've experienced all this stuff all my life. So just to see the creature, it just proves it to me more than what I already knew before.
Okay.
Because I've seen ghosts, I've seen UFOs, and Bigfoot just was thrown into the mix, you know, with on top of this. So,
let's get into that then.
Okay. Well, our buddy Harley, as you know, Harley Owens, had been investigating this one site that he found out about from Scott Carpenter's son.
Okay.
So he went up there and he had talked to him and he decided to go investigate this area. And he had been investigating and had all kinds of sightings and different things happen when he called in the rest of the team, which was Harley Owens, and then we had me, and then we had Robert Effler and his wife, Michelle Effler. So we all went over to investigate this area. We pulled up, and as we're pulling in where we're going to do the investigation at, I see elk sign, I see deer sign. We got out, looked around, we found bear sign, we found bobcat sign. So there's plenty of food sources for the Bigfoot.
And you're down there in Tennessee, correct?
He is. I'm in North Carolina.
But I mean the researcher.
Yeah, it was in East Tennessee.
Okay.
And we got up there, and I always check for, anytime I go do an investigation, I check to make sure there's a food source and water source. There's a creek runs down the bottom part of the property where we were at. We started going through there, and we instantly started finding, as you mentioned, structures. We found an arch tree that had been pulled over and then something put on the end to hold it down. Mm-hmm. And the tree that had been put over the end, the stump for that tree was 20 feet away from it. There's no way in the world it could have possibly fell sideways and then moved.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and, we found a dogman track that was about 5 inches wide and probably, I would say, 6 to 7 inches long.
Now,
go ahead.
Stay with me here. But dogman is a problem for me.
Okay.
Bigfoot, I have absolutely no problem like legitimizing in my head.
I understand.
It makes sense. But when you have something that has a canid feature to it,
okay,
that to me becomes a problem. And I think partially I have somewhat of a science mind like my son does. And when I go to a dog man, I don't dispute its existence, but to have it walking around on an everyday basis.
They've been around since 400 BC.
See, to me, dogman would be something that I feel would probably be more in the realm of spiritual.
Well, they have been around since 400 BC.
Okay.
Marco Polo recorded in his notes when he was exploring the world, he was taken to a tribe of dogmen in India.
I remember hearing this.
They came up to the mountain. They found this. They found this tribe of dogmen. They were human featured with dog heads and fur on their bodies. They communicated with the yaps and barks, and they hunted. And they were warriors. And there was also another tribe in Africa where they believed Anubis come up from that tribe in Africa to Egypt to rule. And the dog, like I said, the dog's been around. There's 120,000 strong at one point in India. Saints were having warring issues, one of the saints actually went over and recruited two of the dog men to be his bodyguards. And, I can't remember what the name of the saint was now. It slips my mind. Did you know that Saint Christopher was actually believed to have been a dog man because he was always drawn as a dog man all the way up till the Mesopotamic. There was a period of time where they changed him over to human. But he was 7 foot tall.
Interesting.
So there's a lot about the dogman out there, and we didn't even know about the dogman here in America. It don't even seem like it until the Michigan dogman and the Beast of Bray Road.
Right. Yeah. In Wisconsin there.
Yeah. And Harley actually has a really good picture of one at this site where I was talking about.
Now he sent me a couple of pictures, and I, no disrespect to him, and no disrespect to any, but you know, it's a bushy area, lots of green, a few twigs, and you know, you see something dark, and it has the quintessential red circle drawn that, you know, a lot of people have issues with that. And I have to admit, I have issues with those as well.
I do too. I have a hard time seeing anything in there.
You know,
but so, he has one picture, if I can get him to find it for you and send to you. Even okay. I found it. If I okay. can see it, most anybody else can. But
we that, found the that I'd like to see.
We found one print there where some of the structures where we went through and we found tree breaks. You know, we were talking earlier about tree breaks. Mm-hmm. Well, these trees weren't just broke over. They were actually green and had been twisted and then broke.
Okay.
Now there's no sign of any kind of mechanical thing to twist them. It takes a lot to twist a 2.5-inch tree twisted all the way around.
It's and breaks over. And it was
yeah,
live,
it was green.
Right?
Yeah. It was green. Yeah. And we found several of those. We found we found the most incredible, if any hunter would have loved this part. We found a ambush site. And the way it was set up, it was perfect because it was as a game trail this way, a game trail this way, and one coming right down the middle like this. And this ambush site was set up right there. And I could stand up in the ambush site. And the logs that were used to create this, there was no other logs, no other trees around that matched these logs.
So they were brought in.
Yeah. And like I said, no tire tracks, no form of mechanical means at all that looks like they put them there. No, you know how mechanical stuff would crush a tree or rip the bark off of it? Not these. I was skeptical when I first got there. I'm always going to an investigation skeptical. And I did find some stuff that they were hauling on Bigfoot that was actually a bear.
Okay.
And I said, no, that's a bear. We know what that is.
Yeah.
But while we were at the ambush site, Michelle was over to our left checking out something else that she had seen, and she got growled at. So we went over to investigate what was growling. We never did see it, but we could hear something moving probably 15, 20 yards away, but we couldn't see it because it was a big, thick laurel bushes. So we went on up, we come over, we found old structures. We found all kinds of stuff below a graveyard. And that's where I found the bobcat prints and stuff was up at the graveyard. We went down, we investigated some other stuff. We found a dogman print. It was fresh. It had just been hit like a muddy area and slid. It was 15 minutes old.
Did you guys get pictures of these?
There was no way to get a picture. All we had was our cameras, our phones, and the way the leaves and were wet and everything else. It was snowing on us and like, sleeting on us. The pictures wouldn't have done anything justice. You wouldn't be able to tell what it was.
Okay.
So we did our investigation. We come back up. We was getting ready to leave. We come back up the hill. And Harley hits me. He goes, let's go down here and investigate this flat. I said, okay. So me and him dropped off. Robert and Michelle stayed on the dirt road. Me and him dropped off. We went down to the flat. We come up a hill. And right across from us was another hill. Probably it was 20 yards away. And between us was a little valley with a laurel thicket. Harley punches me and he goes, there it is. I said, Harley, that's a shadow. He said, no, man, seriously, look, that's it. I said, Harley, that's a shadow. It's a big black shadow. I said, the woods are overcast today. He said, I'm telling you. He said, wait right here. I'm going to start down. And after I get in a position where I can see better, I'll get you to come on down. I said, that's fine. He said, now watch it. And I was watching the shadow. Harley gets down 12, 14 feet down the hill. He steps on a limb that sounds like a gunshot. Snap, real loud.
Yeah.
And I'm watching the shadow, and the shadow puts his huge arm up on the side of the tree and leans all the way out to see where that noise was coming from.
Really?
So I got a little excited because it's my first good Bigfoot sighting.
Yeah.
There was no doubt what it was. That big arm come up, you could see the hair. And when the head separated where it was stretched out to look downhill, you could see it had hair sticking up on top of his head. We nicknamed it Alfalfa.
Nice.
This thing leans over. I could see from the waist up just as clear as day. I wasn't close enough to see face detail or anything like that, because honestly, the adrenaline would hit me so fast and so hard, I was just vibrating with excitement. So I hollered, excuse my language, I hollered, oh shit. And I took off down the hill. I caught up with Harley and started passing him as we went up the other side to get closer to this thing. Of course, Bigfoot's left by then. We get up there, and the limb where that thing's head was,
yeah,
I'm 6 foot tall. The limb was two and a half feet taller than me.
And he leaned down underneath it?
He leaned over. He just went straight forward over to the right and stretched his arm out hanging on that tree to see where that noise was that Harley made.
So, like, descriptors of this thing. Okay. I know you said it was overcast and, you know, you thought it was a shadow. So I'm assuming that, you know, there wasn't a lot of light. You were able to see the hair.
It was jet black. Yep.
And the color was jet black. Did you see anything that looked, that would have been remarkable as far as a different color of skin tone, or was everything just pretty much black?
From where I was at and the way it was kind of an overcast day, it just looked like a big black creature moving. And I say creature because, like I said, when he leaned out and I could see from the waist up, then you could see all the muscle, the ripples of the muscle. And when his arm was stretched out, you know how your arm flexes out when you stretch your arm out?
Yeah.
You could see how his arm flexed out when he stretched out.
So, like that. So when you describe the hair, was this a thick fur or was this a more stringy? Because if you were able to see the musculature underneath it, I'm assuming that it would have been a
real coarse hair.
Yeah. Not so much covered like every, bear. You were able to see through.
Yeah. You could see when he put it up like that and the light was behind him, you could see so much more when he moved. Okay. It was not even funny. Cause like I said, I could see the sprigs of hair sticking up on his head. I could see it hanging down shortly below his arm. You could see the muscles, the shape of the muscle, not the actual muscle ripple or anything like that, but I could see the shape of it.
Right.
And like I said, adrenaline hit me and I started vibrating. And he was also too far away to even think about getting a picture with a cell phone, because then you're going to get that blur and everybody's going to say, that's just a blur, you know?
Yeah.
So we get over there, we're up there investigating where we're at. And it's a very intelligent creature, because where he was at, again, was the envy of any hunter, because where he was at, he could see that entire flat area and what was coming in and out, and nobody could see him. He had two trees he was right beside. Then he had a long hollow area right there on top of the hill where he was at, about 20 feet long. Then at the end was open. You could either drop off to the left or right. So we're investigating. We found three toe prints with a little bit of a little toe and a little bit of a big toe and some dirt. So we're looking at it. And all of a sudden the radio, we start down that holler, down that open area. And our radio goes off and they're saying, what are you guys doing over there? There's something up here about 40 feet from where you're at, tearing the woods up.
Were you guys able to hear that?
I couldn't hear it. I don't know if it was just me being too excited or what. I ain't gonna lie to you.
Yeah.
I was extremely excited. Well,
imagine, I would have been too. I'd have been pissing down my leg.
I just want to get close to get good pictures. All I really wanted. I'd been perfectly happy. But what happened was this thing had dropped off and went down and seen them in the road and stopped dead after it flushed some birds up. And as we started off to the left, it came around behind us and just sat down in that flat where we couldn't see him. Because when we got out of there, we was able to track back. where he stopped and where he turned back around. But that was it. We didn't get to see him anymore the rest of the day. But no, we did see sign where something had come through and knocked the moss off the side of the tree. We've seen different places where something had been coming through there.
Yeah. So when it departed you guys,
yeah,
what were you able to see?
We didn't see anything because we were coming up the hill as it went over the other end.
Okay. All right.
So we hear something moving, but you know how it is when you're in the woods. You get echoes, you get things moving around the woods all over the place anyway. Any kind of animal moves around. And these things are so big, but they're so quiet to be as big as they are.
See, that's the thing for me. So you have people that you hear, I mean, Sasquatch Chronicles, you know, it's a great show. And I've heard numerous people talk about the massive footfalls, the shaking of the earth, the quaking of your clothes as they take a step. And then you have the people like what you're relaying, and that is that they are so incredibly stealthy. It's like, well, in my episode 2 and 3, he said that when it came out where he could see it, when it came out into view, he said it was stomping like a toddler having a temper tantrum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm almost wondering, is that footfall, that heavy, you know, just rocking the earth thing, is that an intimidation thing?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, because gorillas do the same thing. They'll stomp, they'll pound their hands on the ground to intimidate you to get away from them.
Right.
And since these things are a lot like us and like a gorilla both, they're going to have about the same type tendencies. I mean, I still don't believe that they're an ape creature. I still believe that they're
a descendant
of the giants, is what I think they're descendants of. And it's in my book. I talk about that theory and how I relate it over to it. And one way I relate that to them being the same as a giant, well, first of all, the foot's not like a gorilla's. It's not like the Gigantopithecus. It's not the same kind of foot.
Right. It much more resembles ours, but there have been some significant prints that have been found that do have that toe. That is the big toe where it is, much further down, with a similarity to a primate.
And I wouldn't doubt that there are some out there. My eyes have been wide open for a lot of stuff for a long time now. And I've said a lot of things that most people would never believe anyway. So, but if you look at the footprint, they made a casting and they took it over to the Lovelock Cage where they actually found the clothing of some of the giants.
Right.
That had existed. They had a sandal. The Bigfoot casting fit the sandal like it was made for it.
Okay.
So for me, it's, if you read the history of the Indians and when they come over from Asia across the land bridge, they talked about encountering what they called the white giants or the red-headed giants, moon-eyed giants. These are all different names that they gave them.
Right.
And when they attacked them to get rid of these giant cannibals, they said they killed them all off, but I just find that real hard to believe that they killed all of them off. When we have the largest cave system in the entire world that we know of is right in Kentucky, mm-hmm. You know? So I think they survived by going into the cave system, the Mammoth Caves. We have a cave right here in Western North Carolina. You can go in Cherokee and come out in Atlanta.
Really? I
mean, yeah. So I think these creatures move through these cave systems. What'd you say?
I said, no kidding. All the way from North Carolina, you can literally make it to Atlanta.
Yeah. It's on Cherokee land over there.
Holy cow.
Some of the elders have talked about it. I've talked to some of them about it.
That's interesting. I wonder if that can be substantiated by, you know, have there ever been any people that have actually traversed that the entire way, or is that just legend and lore? Not that it would make it not true, but.
Well, you know, Rudolph did disappear, and all of a sudden he popped up over here in Western North Carolina. So, from Atlanta.
Yeah.
You never know. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff. When you get on the reservation and stuff and start talking to the ones that will talk to you, most of them won't mention nothing about any of the cryptids at all. I was lucky enough. I found some people. I work in Cherokee every month. So I know a lot of the people. I get to meet people over there and talk to them. And I was lucky enough to get some of the elders actually talk to me about the little people. They talked to me about Spearfinger. They talked to me about the Sukulu. What is it? The Raven Mocker. And a few other things they talked to me about, but they won't talk to a lot of people about it, especially the little people. They don't like to talk about the little people.
The little people, what's their name for them? Is it the Duende?
They just, as far as I know, they just call them little people over there. I've never heard them say anything else. But they actually found bones and caves under the ground of little people.
I talked to someone, I don't remember who it was, but... literally described it as being clothed much like a Native American.
Yeah.
Only significantly smaller.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, one of the ones I talked to had actually been there when they were excavating and getting ready to put a new building in. And he actually seen the tunnels himself, and he's seen the bones of some of the little people.
No kidding.
And I have found some interesting stuff, but the Bigfoot stuff, what we've seen, we're getting ready to go do another investigation at the same area where me and Harley seen that one. We're going back over there. Harley's got, like I said, he's got one picture of a dog man that's incredible. Hopefully he'll be able to find it and send that to you. But we're going back over to invest. He had an encounter with a dog man over there. You need to talk to him about that.
I was going to talk to him tonight, but he had to go get sick.
Well, this almost made him quit going into the woods and quit to being an investigator. It scared the daylights out of him.
Yeah, we'll have to get him back on here.
Yeah, you'll like that, and he's got a good story about that one. But we're going back over next month to do another investigation. And I've got another place we're going where there's a family of Bigfoot we know. Because they've been in the same area now for about 10, 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
How are you making the assessment that it's the same group?
Because we know the person that has been investigating it. He's one of our guys. His name's Tim Deals. He's also part of Dirty South Squatching. And he's been an investigator for a long time now. And it's not far from his house.
It's amazing to me. And this isn't throwing shade at anybody on either side.
I got you.
But it's amazing how you can have, excuse me. You can have investigators who have gone out for 2 decades and continue to search without ever having had a significant encounter. Mm-hmm. They're finding prints, they're finding tree breaks, they're finding what they consider to be structures. They're finding all kinds of stuff that leads you to believe that you're in the area of them, but not having a significant experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these people that are having so many experiences that it's basically a habituation, and they can go out and for the most part have a encounter at will.
Well, I think it depends on what part of the country you're in. And like this area, there's going to be, we don't have as many of the nomad type Bigfoot as they do out west. Okay. Out west, they're more nomad. They actually move, since there's so much open area out there, they're able to move, you know, state to state, all just constantly moving and keeping up with the food and everything. Well, here you have smaller Bigfoot. I mean, our Bigfoot here, a big Bigfoot here is 9-10 foot tall. That's huge here in Western North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, Georgia. That's a big Bigfoot. And out there, you're looking, their average Bigfoot is 9 to 10, 12 feet. I've even seen one report of a 14-foot Bigfoot out there. But they have so much more open area and so much more chances to follow the game of their choice, whether it be deer or elk or whatever. That's what they're eating on. So they stay with the herds. And here, they're a lot more restricted and refined to certain areas. So I think they actually build homes here or find cave systems to go into here. And
the size discrepancies are pretty amazing, because I know I've had conversations with Robert Kreider out of New Mexico, and the research area that he frequents, you know, he's pulled a 23.5-inch print, mm-hmm. and says that the main alpha male in that group is 12 foot plus.
Oh, I believe it. And here, I mean, just like the difference between here and Florida.
Sure. Yeah.
The, you know,
considerably
the
smaller.
They're more human size. And look, you'd think they'd be bigger considering all the food they got to eat in the swamp.
Yeah, but think about the climate.
Yeah. They're not going to have as much hair either. Yeah. You're exactly right.
It's interesting because there, you know, there's so many different types of descriptions of them, and you know, I think what everybody has in their head is pretty much what you would expect to see out in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
You know, the dark brown, very, very stocky, very robust, mm-hmm. You know, and then you have the difference between that and, you know, the skunk ape down in Florida, very spindly, very, sparsely covered with hair, and, considerably different. And then, you know, you talk about the ones that you get reports out of Russia and that area, mm-hmm. again, back to being massive, very, very well fed, very hair covered, more like a fur than a hair.
Yeah.
You know, but with the winters there and the, you know, it makes sense that they would be more adept to that kind of environment.
Yeah, definitely. And here they'll have thick hair in the winter and they'll have thinner hair in the summer.
That would make me think that they shed, right? You know, they're losing their winter coat. And
I would assume that they do, yeah.
You would think that that would be, I mean, I was going to say easy to find. That's a stupid statement. You would think that it might be more readily found. But the issue with, you know, finding hair is, do you have the $1,500 to $3,000 to put it in a tube and have it DNA tested? Most people don't.
Well, if you don't get the root of it on there, you're not going to get anything anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you can look on and see if it has the hollow, like most human hair have that hollow section in the inside. Mm. Bigfoot don't have that. It's solid. But that's really the only thing you'll get without that root that gives you the actual DNA. I got you thinking about something. I can see your mind working.
You know, sometimes I get into a conversation and it just, you know, I'm 100%. I believe that they exist. I think I had an experience that was the result of being near one. Never saw it. Never at the time that it happened, it didn't occur to me that it would have been. But just the vast differences in people's experiences with these things. It's just, there cannot be that many people who are looking to get their, you know, 15 seconds of fame just to come out. Yes, there are some that are full of shit and they want to be try to be a part of something that's a lot bigger than them. But just the number of sightings and, you know, how, you know, even like the DNRs throughout the country, you know, nope, there's no wolves there. And there's wolves there. And nope, there's no Black Panthers there. And there's Black Panthers there. There's none of, you know, there.
Oh, and, yeah.
Well, there's no big cats down in southeastern Michigan. Well, so you have deer carcasses that are hauled up into a tree. So you got one of two things in my brain that would be able to do that. You either have a big cat or you have a Sasquatch.
Yep.
There's not many other things are going to drop.
not much other choices than that. Hanging over the edge of a, yeah. Well, now you were talking about the different sightings, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The way I look at it is Bigfoot have their own personality. Each one of them does.
Sure.
That's what's going to give you the different types of sightings. You got some that are more shy than others, some that are more aggressive, some who just don't care. I read one the other day from a guy I believed his sighting, because when I was reading it, you could tell when he was recording the sighting, he was scared to death. This thing had no fear of man whatsoever. And it just kind of looked at him like he was nothing and walked away from him, you know? And I mean, there's so many different personalities in these things that, you know, that could change from day to day. We found areas over there. That looked like there were small Bigfoot had been there playing around in the leaves. And we also, like I said, we found all kinds of stuff in that area. We're going back. And I'm taking a better camera this time. I've got a camera that actually will lock on to faces.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm taking that. Hopefully I can get something with it. I'm taking a back body cam. I'm going to hook on the back of my hat to catch anything behind me, because they're bad to sneak around behind you and watch you.
Well, that was, you know, you mentioned Scott Carpenter's son being involved. And, you know, Scott, we lost him not quite a year ago. And he was kind of revolutionary in the using the camera on a motorized gimbal on his back so that it stabilized as he was moving to give him much clearer video footage of what was going on behind him. And, you know, much like, not to take anything away from him and no disrespect towards him, but, you know, like much like the pictures that you get where you have a lot of bushes and, you know, you got a red circle and there's a little bit of dark something back behind there, but, you know, having not been there, you don't know what the person was going through and all the nuances of the situation. But, you know, Scott captured some wacky stuff. You know, now people accused him of not necessarily faking anything, but accused him of, you know, using some significant filtration and distorting colors and stuff to get things to pop out to be seen better.
Right.
So, you know, I guess you can make that argument. I've done that during ghost investigations where I've got, you know, what I thought was a pretty significant apparition. And yeah, I changed the filters and everything because it makes it pop out more.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't necessarily think that that's anything to accuse anybody of, but I know that, you know, people were taking some issue with some of his evidence,
with everything, because they don't want to admit that there's something out there. They don't admit that you've seen something that they haven't seen. The people are just, they're very trivial.
Well, the Bigfoot community in particular is a horrible place.
Oh yeah.
I've met some of the nicest people in the world in this community. But man, when you start like venturing into the Facebook groups and the ones that don't block the trolls that go in there and just, you know, try to lay waste to everything anybody says, it's such a toxic environment. It's like, you know, sometimes I look at, you know, people that are in these doing these investigations, and I'm like, I don't even know why you're into this, because, you know, people are terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Oh yeah, I agree 100% with you. But you just do what you got to do and don't worry about it. Yeah. So that's where I'm lucky. I'm to the point, I'm turning 57 years old here in a few weeks, and I don't care what anybody thinks.
Just don't give a shit anymore. I'm with you there, brother, because I'm going to be 59 in June, and I've had that. I don't give a shit what you have to think. I've had that for some time now. So
yep. And I don't go out and do these investigations. Now we'll go out and help people. And one thing about our podcast, we don't lie. We're not scripted. We're just like me and you are right now. We're talking back and forth. We're telling about different things, and we try to help people out. And if anybody has any kind of sighting, whether it be ghosts, UFOs, cryptid creatures, anything, we're willing to go out and check it out for you. And we're all ex-hunters, or we're, I don't know if they are. I'm an ex-hunter, but they still hunt. And I've been in the mountains all my life, so I can track. I can tell you what I'm looking at on the ground. I can tell you if it's scat from a bear or a deer or a Sasquatch or whatever. I've just been around it all my life, so I'm not out here to impress anybody. I did that when I was acting. I ain't worried about none of that silly crap anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That takes a lot of energy and a lot of effort. Yeah, it's not worth it.
It's just like lying. I don't do that because it ain't worth the problems.
Well, I mean, if you lie to somebody, they find out, you're going to drive them away. I mean, what you know, and if you got somebody close to them, there's no sense in lying to people that are close to you anyway. So
I don't
understand that.
And I'm too old for that mess.
That you end up having to, you have to more lies to cover. It's just
in my mind don't work that good anymore. No. But
so what, like of all your investigations, any of the things you guys have been called out to, anything, what is the standout, oh shit, scared the hell out of you?
Nothing's really scared me. I get excited, but I really don't get scared. I had a long time dealing with ghosts. So only thing that scares me about the dead is the demons. I've only seen one evil thing in my life that was, it was a shadow person. And now that's not a good thing to see.
Yeah.
I didn't like it, but I wasn't scared. It actually pissed me off more than anything else, because it did give me a little bit of fear, and I don't like fear.
What were the circumstances around that?
Well, this was just a friend of mine. He had rented a house, and he just had a really uneasy feeling about it. So he asked me to come over and take a look at some stuff. And he had a 130-pound Rottweiler that he had there at the house. And I go over, and the house is like over 100 years old when we get there. And I'm like, something don't feel right. He said, well, just wait till you see this. And we went downstairs, and they had cages cut into the walls of this, of the rock and stuff underneath the house. And it had bars on it, and they even had chains in the inside where people had been locked up in them.
Oh, Jesus.
And we were standing there, and it just, you just had this really.
So it was like a dungeon?
Yeah, it really was. And it was just a creepy feeling. And when I got to looking, and the dog, we're talking about a 130-pound Rottweiler, this thing is crying and has backed up into the corner beside me. And it's just, I mean, it's whining and crying and trying to keep its head down. And we get to looking, and in the, I guess it was the middle cage, there was a shadow in it. And it come out of that bars and come around the wall to the right-hand side. We went back upstairs. I said,
I would have too.
The dog beat us upstairs. We come up the steps, and you just felt like something was behind you. So we come up the steps, and I turn around real quick, and this thing come up the stairs behind us and come around the wall all the way around the living room. And it went up on the ceiling, and all you could see was two red eyes. And I said, I'm out of here. And I left.
Sorry,
I
said, sorry about your luck.
I hate it for you. You shouldn't have rented a place. I'm gone. I never went back over. Because if it creeps me out, there's something wrong, because I'm kind of a weird person anyway. So... But I've dealt with ghosts and stuff with no problem. And the Bigfoot didn't even scare me. The Bigfoot got me so excited. All I could think of was, let's get closer to it. And we're talking about a creature that could rip me in half and not even think twice about it.
See, that's that, you know, like when I start thinking this and I start processing, you know, so many stories that I've heard and experiences and stuff, it's like, you know, To be that close to something that, if it wanted to, you know, first of all, it's, you got to put it on par with a wild animal, right?
Yeah.
You gotta put it on par with a rhino or a bear or something that, if it wanted to, and it decided that it doesn't want you there, it could be on you in a heartbeat and there's nothing you could do about it.
Oh, no. These things move. They do make a lot of noise when they move if they want to. They're just like humans. If you want to make noise when you walk, you can make noise.
Sure.
And everybody will know you're there. But if you want to be quiet, I can walk and you can't hear my footsteps at all. And I've been in the woods where you can... I was in the woods hunting one time, and I heard this god awful noise. It was loud. And I thought, what in the world is that? And I was thinking bear or something was out there with me. It was a dead blame chipmunk making more noise. And the deer walked right by me. I didn't even hear the deer.
Yeah.
So, you know, the noise that they make is what they want to make. And it's the same way with these dog men. That if they don't want you to hear them, you're not going to hear them. You're not going to see them unless they want you to. And that's the reason I want to do these investigations. I want to find out more so I can put it on paper so everybody will know what to look for. If you know what to look for and you know what to do in the woods, then you're going to be safe from the woods and you're not going to bother them and they're going to leave you alone. And that's my whole thing. I want to help out everybody understand, look, these creatures are real. If you know what to do, just like a bear. If you leave a bear alone, 9 times out of 10, a bear ain't going to bother you.
Right.
I've chased bear down my driveway. It's just, I know what they're going to do. I've been around bear for 57 years, so I don't think about going outside and running a bear down the road or whatever, because I know unless I'm blocking food or blocking them from their little ones, they're not going to bother me.
Yeah. What's your thought on what is Dogman's just a natural inhabitant of this world?
I think so. Yes. That's what I'm led to believe. The next book I'm doing has Dogman. It's about Dogman. It's about Dogman. It's about, Chupacabra. It's about werewolves. It's about skinwalkers. And it's probably going to have one or two other canine creatures in there. But I'm writing these books like this one to give everybody a background on these creatures. and tell them a little bit about the history of them, what to expect when you're going to see one. And I mean, like hellhounds. Most people have never even seen a hellhound or heard one. I have a friend of mine who's seen one in England. He's seen Black Shuck. And he has it's in this book right here. It's in this book where he had actually seen, he called it the Dogman, but it was actually a black oversized wolf, which falls in the same line with Old Shuck, which is one of the creatures up in England.
Yeah. I've heard of that before.
Yeah. And you wait to read the story in that book that he received. I didn't change anybody's story. I took the exact story that they honored me with, and I put in their words in the book.
Okay.
Because I don't want to mess with anything. I wasn't there, so it wasn't up to me to change anything. And he's a great guy. He really is. I've laughed and cut up with him several times online and talked to him on the phone a few times. But his story is incredible. He even made the news in England.
Did he really? You'll have to put me in touch with him. I'd love to talk to him about that.
Okay. If I can find him, I will. We've been out of touch for a little while because he got busy and so did I. But he actually has his own Facebook site, and I'll send that to you if I can remember to get it to you.
Okay.
But you'll like him. He's a good guy.
Well, you've been a great guest. Interesting stuff. But honestly, I want to get that. I want to get that book. I think that would be a nice little pocket caddy here to reference some things.
Okay, I'm tickled to death. Like I said, you can find my books on Amazon. That's the only place that they publish the books out of Beyond the Fray. They do everything through Amazon.
Okay.
And the Legends, Myths, Monsters, and Ghosts, they actually have a audio version of that and Kindle and hardback. And the other one, they have Kindle and hardback of the Monsters of the World.
Nice. I bet that's kind of cool to have an audio book of something that you wrote. Have you listened to it?
I'm terrible because I listened to a little bit of it. The preview of it, but it's like my acting. I don't watch it or read anything that I do. I just kind of put them off to the side.
Yeah.
But it's actually good. They did it with AI. It was
really?
A beta project through Amazon that my book got put into, and they're seeing how good it does. Voice actors are super expensive.
Yeah.
Anywhere from 3,000 up for a voice actor, but you can get an AI that reads it. And actually, the new AI that reads them actually puts in inflections and all that stuff of the voices. So it's not just this computerized voice you're hearing. It actually sounds real good. I listened to the preview part of it. But they did that because it was part of a beta test.
Very cool.
But or you can go to my website. It's authorgeorgelunsford.x10host.com. And I've got my bio on there, and you'll find all kinds of weird crap about me, how strange I am.
what about like your investigative stuff? Is that on your website as well?
Some of it. My wife does my website, so she works all the time too, so she has a hard time keeping up with all my exploits. we're doing the Georgia Bigfoot Conference Saturday. We're going to be there talking to people, and we're going to have a table set up for NCI. And if anybody around Georgia that wants to stop in and see us Saturday, come on by.
So awesome. Well, if you find yourself up in the northern Indiana area in mid-September, September 14th, I'm hosting Bigfoot and Brews for the third time.
Oh, cool.
It's been three consecutive years, and it's held in Dowagiac, Michigan, which is the home of the 1964 Dewey Lake Monster sightings.
Oh.
And that was an entire summer worth of sightings that happened. I think the first one was reported June 3rd. 1964, And till this day, the whole town, that whole area really embraces the events of back then. You can drive through that area and everybody's got Bigfoot silhouettes. There's been a couple of places that homeowners have had hired a very good, incredibly talented chainsaw artist who has taken trees and turned them into 10-foot tall Bigfoot statues. And it's awesome. it's a very nice little community, and man, they really embrace the whole topic of it. So it's a great place to hold a conference, and it's held at a brewery, so food and drinks are brought to your table as you're listening to the speakers. So it's a little unique in that it's not like your typical conference where everybody's sitting shoulder to shoulder in a bunch of chairs in a conference room. It's much more laid back and just a lot of fun. So,
well, send me that link to that and I'll pass it around to all my stuff and I'll try to get you more people there.
I appreciate that. I will do that.
I appreciate it.
Well, sir, George, it has been a pleasure talking to you. I'm glad our friend Harley put us in touch, and it's been a lot of fun talking to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I very much enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.